Good evening. Okay, thank you everyone for coming. I would like to thank the Vadair, Ovi Kosher, and the St. Louis Kollel for jointly encouraging me to give this year. Some of you might be familiar that on an ongoing basis with my position in the Vad, we meet regularly with the Mashkichim to learn different halachos that are pertinent in Kashrus, like Malicha, salting meat, and things that come up in Hilchos Shabbos, and we've discussed in the past couple sessions different halachas regarding chametz that come up in a kashrus setting. Tonight, I'd like to discuss halachas of chametz, particularly biur chametz, destroying, obliterating the chametz, and bedikas chametz and bitul chametz, searching for the chametz and nullifying the chametz in a setting not so much, so to speak, halacha lemaisa, not so much of the do's and the don'ts. We're all familiar with the night before Pesach. We search for chametz. The next morning, we burn it. That I'm not really going to be discussing so much, but more of the mechanics, more of the reckoning behind the halacha to understand the ins and outs and the details of the lumdus of how the halachas really work. The meeting? Upstairs, Nicola. Okay, so I'd like to start with first the question. There was a story, a scenario that happened, and with that, use it as a springboard to get to many of the halachas of chametz. And the question and the story was as follows. It's in the first paragraph here on top of the paper. There was a Jew, I think it was happened, he lived in Israel, and he was very religious. He was makbid on all the chumras that you could be makbid on, all the stringencies for Pesach he had adapted. And of course, the night before Pesach, he searched his whole house for chametz. And of course, the next morning, he properly nullified and burnt all his chametz. And after Pesach, he's going through his mail, and he notices he got a letter from a distant relative in Chutz La'aretz, a not religious relative, that from a lawyer, that his relative had passed away. And he was the closest of kin. He was the closest relative, a nephew, whatever it was. And he now has the windfall of his long-lost cousins or uncles, whatever it was, relatives, bakery. And this was a tremendous business. Bakery meaning real good chametz, real good, I don't know, whatever it was, Entenmann's donuts, whatever it was, something really delicious. And now he had inherited this windfall of this inheritance already prior to Pesach. He had no knowledge of it. He didn't realize until after Pesach, when he was going through all his mail, the week and a half of mail that he had collected, and he realizes that there's a letter, and for the past 2 weeks, he's already owned this bakery.
And party.
Yeah, but he had no knowledge of owning this bakery before Pesach, and now when he turns to the rabbi, he has a question. Number one, did he transgress the prohibition of owning chametz over Pesach? He had no knowledge of it before Pesach. He didn't realize, but it had already been bequeathed to him before Pesach, number one. And number two, as we'll discuss shortly more in a moment, the halach is that if chametz is left over Pesach, is not properly disposed of or sold to a guy or nullified before Pesach, that chametz is called chametz shavalav Pesach, chametz that passed over Pesach. Even if it was done without knowledge, it was done by mistake, the halach is that chametz remains prohibited forever. You can't sell it, you can't eat it, you can't even give it to a guy. It has to be destroyed. So what is he to do? He has now, let's say, $1 million worth of baked goods sitting in a warehouse that now he's the owner of. It's very exciting. As Mayor said, he got a windfall of cash now, but it could be the first business venture he has to do is take a loss of $1 million. So what does he do? Big question, huh? It's a good thing they didn't ask me this question. I wouldn't have no idea. He cries, right? It's a shver shaila, as we say. It's a hard decision. So I'd like to use this as a springboard to get into many of the details of halachas of chametz, and hopefully as we go along, try to suggest a few possible answers to what this person should do.
Is he living in Eretz Israel, this guy, the inheritor?
Yes, let's say. I don't have all details, not clear, but let's assume that in our case now. So he's living in Eretz Israel, his long-lost relative in the middle of Illinois, not religious Jew, passed away the day before Pesach. Everything was bequeathed to him because he's the only surviving nephew, whatever it is. And now he's got it all. But the question is, halachically, what does he do with it? Here we go. So let's go to part two, which is let's quickly recap many of the mitzvahs as they relate to chametz. So there are numerous mitzvahs in the Torah related to not having chametz over Pesach. I highlighted particularly over here five of them, and these are all crucial. Number one, the mitzvah of what we call tashpisu. I didn't put down the whole pasuk, but the pasuk says that we eat shivas yom and matzos tochelu. For 7 days, we eat matzos. Ach, b'yom harishon. However, on the first day, which the Gemara darshins means the day prior to Yom Tov starts, which we call Erev Pesach, tashpisu se'ar mibateichem. We must eradicate and get rid of all the se'ar, all the leavened products from our house. So that's the halacha, that before Pesach, we must destroy all of our chametz. We look in our local calendar, we'll see exactly what time that has to be. Midoraisa, it has to be done before the sixth hour, the midday, but the Rabbanon, we do an extra hour before. So before, by the fifth halachic hour of the day, whatever time it's going to be this year, approximately 11 o'clock-ish, we have to destroy all our chametz. That's the first mitzvah we have to keep in mind, tashbisu. The second two and three, are grouped together. That's the prohibition of the lav, the negative commandment of Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimotzeh. There the pasuk says, V'lo Yiroeh l'cha chametz, V'lo Yiroeh chasa'or b'chol gulach. A person cannot see or leave in a place any of his own chametz in an area where it's visible over Pesach. If he does that, he transgresses this. And always, basically, always comes together. You always get a two-for-one special with this. If you have transgressed Bal Yiroeh, you're usually always going to transgress as well Bal Yimotzeh, which that pasuk is Shivas Yomim for 7 days. Se'or lo yimotzeh v'teichem, he cannot have found in our possession any chametz. So the first three, the first one, Tashbisu, is a positive commandment to eradicate, get rid of the chametz. The next two are Lavin, Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimotzeh. We're not allowed to have this chametz or see this chametz of our own, this possession. If I'm walking down Del Mar and I see a guy eating chametz on Pesach, that's no problem. Maybe I shouldn't look at him because it's not appropriate to look at people eating, or maybe I might get the desire to want it on Pesach, whatever it is, but I'm not transgressing anything by seeing somebody have a guy have the chametz. It's my own chametz. If I see it or if I have it in my possession, I'm transgressing this. Now just keep this in mind. It's a progression here, because if a person properly fulfilled Tashbisu before Pesach, it's almost definite that he will not transgress Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimotzeh, because he properly took care of all his chametz. If he's going to transgress Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimotzeh by having chametz over Pesach, in turn, that means he also transgressed the positive commandment of destroying his chametz. He didn't destroy his chametz. That's why he's now finding chametz. So it kind of all works together. The fourth prohibition of the Torah is the prohibition of consuming chametz over Pesach. And there's a separate mitzvah which prohibits eating chametz on Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, after midday. We're not going to focus on that so much now. That's the pasuk of Lo Ye'ochel Chametz. And the fifth primary prohibition of chametz on Pesach is a separate a pasuk which the Gemara explains teaches us we can't even eat taruvas chametz, any item which has chametz mixed into it, even if it's not a real piece of bread, it has some type of wheat or yeast or leavened product as a sub ingredient. That's also going to be a problem on Pesach of taruvas chametz. So these last two of actually eating chametz and taruvas chametz we're not going to discuss today. That we all know we can't eat chametz on Pesach. We're going to primarily focus, as we go along, on Tashbisu. Let's get that phrase down, because that's an important phrase. Tashbisu, everything has to be eradicated before Pesach. And Bal Yiroeh and Bal Yimotzeh, the two lavim of not having chametz in our possession over Pesach. Now, to keep in mind, the prohibition of eating and of consuming chametz on Pesach is very severe. If a person chas v'shalom transgresses it, he is chayef kares. He's killed bidei shemayim. There's only three isuri achila that midaraisa are chayef kares. One of them is chametz on Pesach. The other two are chaylev. If somebody eats one of the forbidden fats from a kosher animal, we know some of the fats have to be removed, are usher to eat. And if someone eats dam, blood of an animal, it's also chayef kares. Other things which we are prohibited to eat, as severe as they are, the typical cheeseburger is usher, but it would not get us the death penalty. Bidei shemayim, we just get malchus. But since the Torah put a special severity and mentioned so many times that we can't eat chametz, they put additional safeguards in to protect us from transgressing this severe prohibition. They include, I just picked out the two primary ones. Number one, the issur of chametz b'mashuhu, that even if a smallest amount of chametz falls into a pot of food, there is no halachas of bittul, does not become nullified. As we know, typically throughout the year, the person is making his chalent and a drop of milk falls in. We all know if there's 60 times the amount of milk, if there's 60 amount chalent is 60 times greater than the milk, the chalent's kosher, no problem. You don't have to call the rabbi, it's a simple question. It's good to call him anyway just to make sure, but that's simple. On Pesach, if someone's cooking and a drop of the smallest Cheerio, the smallest crumb falls in, so the Rabbanan said it's never batal. In order to make sure that we take the seriousness and the severity of chametz to the utmost, Chazal said it will not be batal, and that whole food, the whole chalent will become aser. That's the Rabbanan. The second thing the Rabbanan put in, which we're going to focus on as we go along, is this prohibition we mentioned briefly before of chametz sh'ol av Pesach. Any chametz which a Jew owned, could be irreligious, he could be not knowledgeable of the halachas, or he could be dunning it, where he did it on purpose, a mistake, it doesn't make a difference. Chazal said there's a knas, there's a fine. Any chametz that was owned by a Jew over Pesach is forever usur. You can't get benefit from it, you can't give it to a guy, it has to be completely destroyed. Okay, now that we have all that information down, let's go down to the next page, point number three. Now, besides learning some Hebrew and Aramaic terms today, I entertained myself by putting in a French word as well, and that's the au fait of Bior Chametz, which means the detailed knowledge, getting down to the kishkes of really understanding of how Bior Chametz works. So Minchas Chinuch, in his classic work on the mitzvahs, raises a question, what's the lumdis? How do we understand the mitzvah of Tashpisu? Like we said, the mitzvah of Tashpisu means to destroy Chametz. Is it, now it is a positive mitzvah that it's a, we have to fulfill it, but do we need to fulfill it in a positive way? Is it kumvaseh? Meaning, do I have to get up actively Erev Pesach morning and do something to destroy my chametz, burning it, throwing it into the sea? Do I have to do something active? Or it's passive, meaning by the fact I don't have any chametz in my rishus, I cleaned out my pantry last week. For the past week, I've been eating kosher for Pesach products before Pesach already started. I know I don't own any chametz, so I automatically fulfill that mitzvah. Again, so is it a positive action I need to do? Is it kumva asei? Is it something I physically have to do Erev Pesach in order to fulfill this mitzvah? Or can I fulfill it passively just by sitting back and knowing that I own that I do not own any chametz? This is his chakira. This is his basic approach to two ways of looking at the mitzvah. And he says there are numerous nafkaminas just on this page. I just cut out only a small part of his piece, although it kind of fills up the whole page. It goes on for quite some while. On this part, where mostly where it's bolded off, he brings up six nafkaminas, six differences of how you look at the mitzvah. So I'll quickly recap some of them, and you can look at this later. Basically, if you just read the bold, you'll basically get almost everything I'm saying. He says, if you look at it, that it's just a passive mitzvah, so then you don't have to be careful to have to own chametz before Pesach, right? Meaning, if we just think that as long as I know that my house is empty of chametz, I don't own any chametz, there's no mitzvah to me to go to a fire Erev Pesach, I don't have to burn anything. I could just sit back comfortably and relax and know that I don't own any chametz, I fulfilled the mitzvah. That's if you look at it from a passive way. If I look at it from a action, I must do something, that means I must actively be busy Erev Pesach doing something to destroy chametz. I must own some chametz Erev Pesach morning to throw into the fire or to destroy it any other way I'm destroying it. So again, if I have to actively do it, I must own chametz Pesach morning. If it's just a passive mitzvah, then I can just have a much more relaxed morning, so to speak, and I've got rid of my chametz a day or two before. That will be a major nafkamina, number one. Number two, he says, is let's say Pesach, Erev Pesach morning, so I was machmir, and I said, I'm going to have my chametz, and make sure I burn it Erev this year, Erev Pesach, it's on Friday. I'm going to make sure, I'm going to take my chametz Friday morning and throw it into the fire in order to say the kol chamira and to make sure I get the mitzvah. And someone comes along, you know, it's very exciting by the big fire, everyone's very excited to throw things in, everyone becomes a pyromaniac Erev Pesach. Some guy comes over, or some kid comes over, grabs my chametz, and throws it into the fire for me. So what did he just do? Well, he just had a good time, threw something into the fire. But really, what did he do? He just took my mitzvah from me. He took away the opportunity for me to fulfill my mitzvah. If we look at the mitzvah as something that I need to do, a positive act that I need to do, so he just took my mitzvah and stole a mitzvah from me. I can't fulfill that mitzvah. And we have halachos in the Shulchan Aruch that discuss these cases of if someone jumps in front of the line, someone cuts me off and does a mitzvah that I was about to do, the Bezin has the right to fine him 10 gold coins, the Shulchan Aruch says. Meaning a person will have to pay some type of monetary fine if he chaps the mitzvah, if he takes the mitzvah away from me. The classic example that the Shulchan Aruch discusses is if let's say I'm a shochet and I'm shechting the animal, and certain animals are foul, when you shech them, the blood has to be covered. The mitzvah of kisui adam, covering the blood. I'm the shochet, I have the mitzvah after I shech to cover the blood. If someone, a bystander, is walking by, picks up a clump of dirt and throws it on and does the mitzvah before I did it, so the mitzvah is already done. I can't do the mitzvah anymore, and I have the right to take him to a court of law, technically, and the Bezin will tell him that he has to pay me a certain amount, however much the Bezin decides, because he stole my mitzvah. There are certain monetary laws that play into fact over here. So, if we look... Well, if there's a positive action that I must do something to, of course I can still say the kol chamira, that's true. But the question is, did I fulfill the mitzvah? If we learn that the mitzvah is I must do something actively, I didn't do anything actively. Kol chamira is very nice. But what did I do to destroy the chametz? We'll see. We'll discuss kol chamira more as we go along. But at this point, before we get to the kol chamira, it's true, you do have to say kol chamira. If I need to do a physical action to fulfill this mitzvah, like putting on tefillin, right? I can think from today to tomorrow all about tefillin, how great they are. I didn't do the mitzvah. I can learn about tefillin. I can drool over my tefillin. I can look at pictures of tefillin. But if I don't put them on, I haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. So the mitzvah of tashbisu, is it a physical action I must do? I must do something to destroy this chametz. I must throw it into the fire. Or is it passive that all I have to make sure is that I don't own chametz? So if the kid comes along, grabs my chametz and throws it into the fire, so if you look at it, that's only a passive mitzvah. So I got the mitzvah. I have no chametz anymore. It's great. Easy. I don't have to even get close to the fire. Much easier. But if I have to be physically involved in the mitzvah, then I have to make sure I have to make sure to do something physical to get into the fire. That's nafkamina number two.
According to that opinion, would that preclude use of a shaliach?
Okay, that's a good question.
Is it so personal, according to that opinion, that you can't appoint a shaliach to destroy the chametz
for you? I'm not sure. I have to think about that. Okay, I'm not sure. I didn't think about that. Right, usually, but for certain, if it's a mitzvah sheba gufay, like if I compare it to tefillin, a shliach can't put on tefillin for me. He can help me put on tefillin if I'm having a hard time putting them on, but he can't wear them for me, right? So I have to think about that. And right, the chayyur it's not. I want to process that properly before I didn't think about that before, so I don't want to answer that without processing it. Number three, the Mechas Chinuch says, if it's like this, if we say the mitzvah is active, I need to do something. Let's say he says, I eat the chametz after the time I'm not allowed to eat the chametz anymore. So let's say it's the seventh, eighth halachic hour of the day, which I'm not allowed to eat chametz anymore, and I have to have destroyed the chametz. If I go ahead now and eat the chametz, so do I have chametz anymore? No, I destroyed it. But how do I destroy it? By doing an avera of eating the chametz. So there's a principle called mitzvah boba avera. So if we view it, says the Menchas Chinuch, as a mitzvah boba avera, then I have to be active in it, so the action I did was illegal, so I didn't fulfill the mitzvah, because the mitzvah of Aveir, according to some, I'm not getting involved in a lot of discussion, it prevents my mitzvah from being fulfilled properly. So if there's something actively I have to do, so I didn't do an action properly, because I wasn't allowed to eat the chametz. But if the whole mitzvah is just passive, so we don't apply the principle of mitzvah of Aveir in a passive mitzvah, says the Menchas Chinuch, so it's true, I did an Aveir, I did something wrong by eating the chametz, that was an illegal procedure, but I don't get the 10-yard penalty, so to speak. Meaning I fulfill the mitzvah of Tashbisu, because now, Maisa, at the end of the day, I don't have chametz anymore. So again, it'll depend on how you look at it. The fourth thing he says is whether or not women are obligated in this mitzvah or not. If you learn that it's Shev Al Tais, it's just a passive mitzvah, then he says that women would be obligated, like any passive mitzvah women have to do. But if it's an action they have to do, if it's a physical thing they must be involved in, then we have a general principle of mitzvah seisha zman groma, in a physical thing that it's time-bound, women are absolved. So women would not be obligated in this mitzvah. Now it happens to be Paschal women are obligated in this mitzvah, but he's saying, but if that might imply that we have to do something physical, we'll get to that in a moment, how are we going to Paschal? But this is just, again, it's just trying to work it back and forth, understanding how the mitzvah works. And the last thing he says is that when that we need kavana for the mitzvah. If it's a physical action I need to be active in the mitzvah, I need to do it with a positive way, physical action, then I have to, according to the opinions that a mitzvah requires intent, it requires kavana, then I have to have kavana when I'm throwing my chametz into the fire, not just to be safe from the fire, but also to make sure that I'm fulfilling the mitzvah. But if it's just a passive mitzvah, it doesn't necessarily require my das. So basically, this is a lot of food for thought, or chametz to chew over, to think about the mitzvah of tashbisu as we're going to work through this. Is it an active mitzvah, something I must do to fulfill the mitzvah, or passively just the fact that I know that I have no chametz left anymore, so then I could just fulfill it in a much more relaxed way, so to speak, already on Erev Pesach, just by knowing that I don't have chametz. So how do we paskin? So I just quoted the next page on the top, I quoted the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah, it's hard to say how we paskin 1,000%, but I think you can use the Mishnah Berurah as a raya on how he's at least suggesting what's the best way to fulfill the mitzvah. The Mishnah Berurah paskins that he's talking about the halacha of someone who sells his chametz to a guy. So he writes that it's best to leave over some chametz to fulfill the mitzvah and not give all the chametz to a guy. So he says, because if you look, I'm just going to read the Hebrew and explain it. It says, when we come akom, nachan linog, the appropriate custom is, shalo lahotzi kol chemtzai hanishalai bein tayam la'akom. Don't sell, don't give away all the chametz to the guy. Ulekayim, because why not? Because ulekayim mitzvah hashbasa b'shash shishas b'pirurim shemaniach l'sarfim, and just have teeny crumbs left over, shehapirurim nishbasim va'omdim, because they're already considered like nothing. Teeny crumbs that are literally the size of little dust, that's not considered anything chashiv. Even if a person would leave them over on Pesach, ain't it over by Irah? He's not going to transgress the biblical transgression because it's too. You have to have some minimum amount to transgress the Avera. Ella rather says the Mishnah Berurah, Yaniach mechemtzo l'kol ha'pachas kezayis. A person should make sure Erev Pesach morning to have at least a kezayis worth, an olive's worth, volume worth of chametz. k'dei l'kayim mitzvah tashbisu k'tikun, in order that he can fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu. So the way the Mishnah is speaking it out is that he's telling you a person should make sure to have chametz erev Pesach morning. Why is he telling us to have chametz available erev Pesach morning? Because he wants us to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu in an active way. We should positively go ahead and do a destructive act to our chametz. If the Mishnah Berurah understood tashbisu as just being a passive mitzvah, then that's good. I gave all my chametz away to a guy, or I ate it all myself before Pesach, or whatever I did with it, I'm good to go. Why should I keep anything and fulfill the mitzvah? And the implication to me from the Mishnah Berurah would seem that he wants you to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu by doing a positive act, and that would imply that he understands tashbisu as being involved in the mitzvah, not just a passive mitzvah. Okay, so that's all we discussed the past few minutes, was the mechanics or the ofe, understanding the practical detailed information of how tashbisu, of how bir chametz works. Now we're going to shift a little bit and discuss bittul chametz. What does it mean that when I nullify my chametz? I'm making my chametz like I don't own it. How does that work? And what is it, like offer, like dust, we say, right? So let's start like this. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us as follows. A little bit of backdrop. I just quote a couple lines of the Gemara. The Gemara is discussing a halacha of whether or not we can rely on a woman or a child to tell us that a certain area has been checked for chametz. We know when it comes to other rules of testimony, if we want to have testimony, excuse me, in a Jewish court, so we don't, a woman's not suitable to give testimony in a court, a minor under the age of 13 is not suitable to give testimony, but would we trust them over here for bedikas chametz to tell us that an area has been properly checked? So the Gemara suggests, just read what I copied over here. It says, "Mal detema, I would have thought lo lehamnu rabbanon. The rabbanon would not believe them. Kamash malon. The chiddush is teaching us. So this Gemara is telling us, kivan de bedikas chametz mid rabbanonu. Since the search for chametz is only rabbinic, there's no biblical, there's no Torah obligation to search for chametz. Why de mida araisa bebitul ba'almo sagile? Because from a Torah perspective, all you have to do is nullify the chametz." And that's sufficient. You don't have to look for chametz at all. Technically, mida araisa, you can sit on your couch before Pesach and say, any chametz I have in this house, it's like the dust of the earth. And it's much, you don't have to clean. Much easier, right? Now, of course, we know we don't do that for many reasons, but technically that should be good. And it's only mida rabbanon that we have to search for chametz. Therefore, hamnu rabbanon rabbanon. Therefore, the rabbanon believed even people who typically are not believed minat Torah in cases of testimony for the halacha of bedikas chametz, we believe them. But what we're going to focus on now is the Gemara said that midaraisa from a Torah level, bittul ba'al masagile, it's sufficient just to nullify the chametz. So what does that mean? That means that all I do is nullify the chametz, I have saved myself from transgression of Baal Yiroh and Baal Yimotzeh, like we said before. Those are the two main laven, the two main negative prohibitions of making sure we don't have any chametz in our reshus over Pesach. So if all I do is mevatel my chametz, I say these magic words, I'm good to go. Very easy procedure. But we're going to have a machlekes rishayim now, what exactly, how this works. How does the bittul, how does the nullification of chametz work? So Rashi says as follows. Rashi in this Gemara in Pesachim writes, bittul ba'alma, Dichsiv, like the Pasuk says, Tashbisu, you should destroy the chametz, or get rid of the chametz. V'loik siv tivaru, it doesn't say you should, tivaru be the appropriate word to literally destroy it. Do a physical act of burning it, or obliterating it, or some other fancy adjective to completely wipe it out. Tashbisu just means to make it as if it's not important anymore, just like it's cleared away. So just nullifying it in our hearts, says Rashi, that's sufficient. Again, Rashi's making a diik. He's reading the pasuk very carefully. The pasuk says, "Tashbisu sa'arim batechem." Be mashbis. That's the word. Tashbisu the sa'ar from your house. It could have said, if it wanted us to destroy it, the only way to fulfill this mitzvah is destroying it. The pasuk could have used the term tivaru. Or tivarun or tivarum to totally wipe out and eradicate the chametz. Since it used the word tashbisu, that teaches us the halacha that just nullifying it would be sufficient.
Expensive wine or liquor that we want to hide in the house.
So let's say a person owns, you're saying a person owns scotch, bourbon, these things, exactly. and you're not going to drink it all before Pesach for some reason. Why not? Okay, you're going to save it. So you want to, so that, we'll discuss more, I think, in the next week, Mirtz Hashem, the halachas of how we sell chametz to a guy, how that works. But typically, just as we know, what we do is we lock it away in a closet, and we tape it up, whatever, put a chametz sign outside, no one should open that closet over Pesach, and we sell that, the rabbi arranges that sale to the guy so that a Jew doesn't own that over Pesach. So it's not yours. If the guy who bought the chametz whatever, the guy who buys the chametz, whatever his name is, comes in, knocks on the door and says, I heard you got some, you have some good wild turkey. Can I try it? It's his. It's not, it's not yours. It's not, what do you mean? I don't have it. It's yours. You can just come, he can just come into your house and he has full right to take it. So for that week, we're going to discuss more the mechanics of how that works exactly, but that's regarding to selling it. Now, what we sell, we're not really making batel, right? Whatever we're going to close away in the cabinets, the scotch, the bourbon, or the Cheerios, whatever, the macaroni, whatever you're putting away, right? The bread, whatever it is, that you're not saying that's hefker. You want that to be sold to the guy. And if the guy decides to sell back after Pesach, fine, you'll get it back from the guy. But you're not making that hefker, really. Really, what you're doing is you're selling it completely to a guy. That's why it's closed away. Okay. So again, Rashi's explaining bittul, and he's making a deek in the pasuk because the pasuk says tashpisu not tevaru. So we see here the hashpasa b'lev, just nullifying it in the heart, is sufficient. So he's learning that's how he's explaining that in the pasuk. The Rambam in the next paragraph says a similar idea. The Rambam says umahi hashpasa zuha amura b'torah. What does it mean to eradicate to get rid of the chametz? It says in the Torah he sheyevatel hachametz b'libo. It means that a person should nullify the chametz in his heart. The Yachshov also offer, like we said before, he should compare it, consider it in his mind like it's dust. That's it. You mafkir your chametz, or I'm sorry, you mevatel your chametz, you nullify it, and you fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu.
Now, even though it may still be standing there,
it could still be there. You see the donut right in front of your eyes, but it looks like dust. Now, the Ran, many of you shown over here, I didn't put it down over here, ask, they're very bothered by this, meaning, so why did Chazal require me to be mbodik? Right, I mentioned this question briefly before. Why do Chazal require us to check for the chametz? Just sit down on your couch, day before Pesach, say, oh, my chametz is like the dust of the earth. Okay, I'm ready for Pesach. Why do we have to search? Why are we doing all these things for, right? So the Ran writes, one of his answers is because we're afraid that if it's just something that I'm saying, I'm just uttering it with my mouth, it could be I don't really mean it. And it could be that if I find it over Pesach, or if I realize I have that, oh, that's not dust, right? That bottle of Blue Label, that's not dust. I want that. I forgot I had that, right? So we're afraid that if you just do something with your mouth and you don't do any physical action, come with it to search and to put it away, either to finish it, to sell it, to do something with it, we're afraid that you're going to regret what you said later and say, I never really meant that. No, that's too, I'm not throwing out $200 worth of schnapps or whatever it is. I forgot I had all that cake in the freezer. I'm not throwing all that stuff out, right? I don't, that's not dust. So I still want to, it's interesting, there's a parallel to this, right? We've all been having experiences of our life, either we or other people that we've been in contact with got really upset at something we did to them, right? It happens either I got upset at somebody or somebody got really upset at something I said to them. Now, every good Jew, daven Shmona Esrei every day, at the end of Shmona Esrei, what do we say? We say, Elokai Netzar, Lashoni Meiros, Vasecha Midaber Mirma, right? What do we say? We say, Makala, right, thank you. Makala nafshi sidoim, to those people who curse me, who, right, my soul should be silent. V'nafshi ka'ofar la'kol siya, my soul, my nefesh, should be like offer to everybody. Meaning, I'm saying every day in Shmona Esrei, three times a day, that Hashem, you know, give me the ability, because I want my nefesh to be like offer, like dust. But what happens the second someone insults me? That dust doesn't, I don't feel like dust anymore, right?
I kick up the dust,
right? So that's really what we're saying. The idea that the Ran is saying over here also when it comes to Pesach. If a person is just going to do a bittul and just say, oh, my chametz is like dust, the second that's challenged by something that he has regret, that he doesn't really want to do it, we're afraid that he might renege on what he said or say he never had that in mind and come to transgress some isser of chametz on Pesach. So that's why Chacham required bedika as well. But okay, let's go back to the main point here at issue. So again, the Gemara says that midoraisa bittul ba'am is sagi, and according to Rashi, bittul means hashpasa b'lev, just making it nullify with my heart, having the intention that's like offer. Tosfos, which is on the bottom over here on page 3, argues on Rashi, and that's the bottom where it's underlined. And Tosfos says, Amari, the midoraisa, the bittul ba'am is sagi. How does bittul work according to Tosfos? The bottom of page 3, Tosfos says, mitam. The reason is the me'achar shebitlu, once someone nullified his chametz, have a hefker. It's like it's ownerless. The yotza me'rishusa, it's like it's not in my possession anymore. I don't own it. Not just that it's like dust, it's in my house. It's dust in my house. No, it's not dust in my house. It's not in my house. That item over there is not mine. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to nobody. It's hefker means it has no bailus. Midah karmina, how do I know that's sufficient, says Tosus? Aval atoroa shalacher mishal gavoa. Okay, Tosfos says because there's a drasha that the Gemara says later on in Pesachim that the only iser is chametz of mine. It's my chametz. If there's chametz that doesn't belong to me, that's not my iser. So Excuse me, according to Taisus, the way bittul works mitam hefker. That means that it's now ownerless. Not that I was mushbasa, not that I destroyed it by turning into dust. Not that my words, poof, turned this donut into dust. My words kept this donut a donut. But now this donut is not owned by me. Again, according to Rashi, my words are now saying this donut is dust. And it's actually an interesting discussion. According to Rashi, just think about it. This is theoretical. It's not halacha, lemaisa, just something to think about. According to Rashi, that bittul works, I made this donut dust now, yeah? On Pesach, if I would pick up this donut and eat it, what did I just eat?
Dust.
Did I eat chametz or did I eat dust? There are those who want to say that according to Rashi, it should be I ate dust and not eating chametz because I said it was mine and I turned it into dust. Now, of course, we're not going to paskin like that, and I'm not recommending that, chas v'shalom, that's be a big prohibition according to most Rishayim, but that's what should come out. But according to Taisvis, if it's still chametz, of course, 100%. It's just that it's hefker, it's not mine anymore. That's why I'm saving myself from transgressing the Isser by Ram by Yimatzeh by proclaiming it hefker. Then Taisa just ends off by saying that typically, in order to proclaim something hefker, you have to have three people in front of you. I can't just sit in my living room and say that I'm mafking my Rolls Royce. It doesn't work. Right? And if someone has me walking by my house and hearing that I said my Rolls Royce is hefker, and he goes and jumps in and drives off. He can't do that. Even though I said it's hefker, but I need to have three people in order for it to be chal. Says Tais, that's only midrash, right? That's only midrabanan. But on a biblical level, technically, anytime I say something is hefker, it works even if no one hears me. And therefore, according to Taisvis, the way bittul chametz works, and I'm a vatal my chametz, I've made it hefker, I've made it that it's now onerous.
How do you see the Rashi did
such us? Because Rashi's saying, hashbasa belev, and like, I just expound that with the Rambam, and the Rambam says, Vishe batla chametz belibo, v'yachshav also ka'offer.
Just the Rambam.
Right. I think, and I was putting it together. You want to say it's different?
No, I don't know. I don't see Rashi saying that it's
tough. Right, okay. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch, on the top of page 4, Shulchan Aruch writes, and this is important, the nuance in the Lashon here, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Achar ha-bedika, after we search for the chametz and the night before Pesach, Miyad b'layla, immediately at night, yivatlenu, you should mivatel the chametz, v'yomar, and this is the text you should say, kol chamira, any leavened product, de'isa b'rishusi, any chametz that I have in my possession, de'lo chazite, that I did not see, de'lo biarte, that I did not get rid of, libatel, it should be batel, nullified, v'lahavi ka'afra d'ara, it should be like the dust of the earth. Now, if we read this nusach, according to Taisus, we missed the boat. According to Taisus, really what needs to be done is I have to say it's hefker. Bittul necessarily could be an expression of hefker, but it should be clarified that when I'm using the word bittul, what I really want to do is make it hefker. According to Rashi, bittul is very good because all again, like I'm doing, like we explained Rashi before, is that I'm just nullifying the chametz. I'm saying it's not chametz anymore. It's mine, and I'm saying it's not it anymore. But according to Taisus, the Shulchan Aruch should have said lashon of hefker, and that's what the Mishmura points out. Mishabura says, "V'lahavik afra da'ara v'nochor," and it's appropriate, says the Mishabura, "Sheyomar." You should add into the text, "V'lahavik hefker ka'afra da'ara," and that's if you look in the standard Siddur or in the Haggadah, whatever you're going to use by the Bedikas Chametz night. That's typically the text that we have. But according to Shulchan Aruch, straight up, it seems like you don't say the word hefker. And the Chok Yaakov, which is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, just explains basically what we spoke out, that the difference and the nuance and the difference of the text will depend on how you learn. If you learn like Rashi, then the bittul doesn't work like hefker, so you don't mention hefker. If you learn like Taisus, then you mention hefker, and he concludes, like the Mishnah Berurah said, that it's appropriate to say the Lashon of hefker. Now the question is, fine, so we have Taisus learning hefker, Rashi is learning bittul, Shulchan Aruch said, just say bittul, you don't have to say hefker, comes along the Mishnah Berurah, says, say hefker. Why didn't the Shulchan Aruch just say hefker? Meaning the Shulchan Aruch knew Rashi, knew Taisus, and some reason chose the Lashon of Bittul just to nullify it and didn't choose the expression of saying hefker. Seemingly, if he would have said Bittul and hefker, like the Mishnah Berurah is suggesting, he would have satisfied all camps. So why did the Shulchan Aruch just do that? Why did he want to, you know, avoid saying hefker and prefer to say Bittul? What's the milo? What's the benefit of saying Bittul and not saying hefker? And why the Shulchan Aruch didn't suggest doing that? So, I didn't put it on the papers, I didn't copy it down. It was a long, the Tshuva from Naidubi Yehuda, about 250 years ago approximately, discusses a very interesting case that happened. He had a story that said it was Reuven, and Reuven had a collection of barrels of schnapps. He had some whiskey, bourbon, whatever, he had scotch, he had some stuff, and he didn't have room in his house to store it, so his friend Shimon had a large cellar, and he used to store all his barrels of schnapps in Shimon's cellar. Okay. That's great. For the rest of the, for the most of the year, that's a fine process. before Pesach, Shimon, who has all the stuff in his basement that doesn't belong to him, sends a message to Reuven and with his maidservant, and says, please tell Reuven that he should sell all the chametz that he has by me before Pesach, you know, because we got to do something with this chametz before Pesach. So please, again, Shimon, who has this stuff in his basement, which is not his, sends a message to Reuven with his maidservant, please go to Reuven and tell him to arrange the sale of all the stuff on the bottom, and all the stuff I have in my cellar. Okay, so the woman goes to Reuven's house, she delivers the message, and there's some broken telephone that happens over there. Reuven tells her something along the lines of, I don't have time to do it, please tell Shimon just arrange it for me. I don't have time to go to the Rav and work it out. Can you just tell your master to work it out for me and, you know, he'll take care of it. And she misunderstood what he said, and she just thought that he said that he'll take care of it. So she goes back to Shimon and tells Shimon, oh, don't worry, Reuven's going to take care of it. Miscommunication. Okay, sometimes miscommunication is not a big deal. But here it could be a very big deal, because if Reuven doesn't sell it, because he thought Shimon's going to take care of it, and the maidservant told Shimon that Reuven's taking care of it, so Reuven and Shimon come to Shul Pesach night, they come wish each other good yontif, and Reuven gives a big yashikoyach, Shimon, thank you so much, you saved me such a headache the other day, I know you keep my chametz the whole year for me, and now you sold it for me, thank you so much, such a big, you know, you did such a good, you know, you helped me so much. And Shimon says, what are you talking about? You sold it, Reuven. Reuven says, no, I told your Misharis, your maidservant, that you used to arrange it for me. And they go back and forth and they realize that there was a miscommunication and now no one sold the chametz. So what happens? Well, if you simply just look at the halacha at face value, it seems like it's going to be chametz all over Pesach. It's chametz that is now being, it's existing over Pesach in the domain of a Jew. It should be usher, and however much money is going to lose, you got to lose. So of course, that's be the simple halacha, but they don't want that to happen. Who wants that to happen? Spill all that good schnapps. So the Noid Behuda gets involved, and they ask the Noid Behuda what to do. And the Noid Behuda says, it might depend on what nusach he used in his Kol Chamira. Did he use a Lashon of Bittel, or did he use a Lashon of Hefker? Because Reuven and Shimon were both good Jews, both said Kol Chamira before Pesach. The question was just Reuven wanted that to be sold, and didn't want to say Kol Chamira in it. He wanted it to be sold to a guy so he could buy it back after Pesach. He didn't necessarily have in mind for it because he thought it was going to be sold. Now, the Buddha said, as follows. If you said a Lashon of Hefker, Hefker is Dinei Mamonis, it's Chayisha Mishpat. And there's a halacha of Hefker Betois, Lo Yehavi Hefker. If you made a mistake and you reneged ownership on something and it was completely, you didn't realize the value of it. I mean, let's say I have this little ring. I think it's a plastic diamond ring. I say, oh, I don't need it. I give up on it. And then a second later, the diamond dealer walks down to it and says, you just said you don't want that. Do you realize that's, you know, a real diamond and this and that, and it's this, you know, whatever it is, it's worth $10,000? I'm like, no, of course not, right? I pull it back. So there's, okay, I'm just oversimplifying the case, but that's an idea of Hefker Betois, and I have the right, if I didn't realize the value of something, and there's a great difference in what I thought it was and what it really is, then I could renege on what I said. But Bittel doesn't work like that. If I was Mevatel something, once I'm Mevatel, it doesn't work with Dini Mamonis, it works in my mindset. I made all my chametz bottle like the dust of the earth, so that even if I didn't realize what I had, it should potentially still work. So Yehuda would say, it might depend on how you texted, which text you used for Kol Chamira. Did you say the text of Hefker? Because then we'll say Hefker Betois, it's not a good Hefker. But if it's Bittel, then maybe the Bittel doesn't work with Tam Hefker, like Rashi. So are you a Rashi Yid? Are you a Taisus Yid? And the answer, the exact details of how the Yehuda worked out the case is beyond the scope of this discussion right now. Other factors got involved, but I just want to isolate that idea that it's not so simple, just say any text you want. You know, the Shulchan Aruch said Bittel, and the Mishmur says add Hefker. Why didn't the Shulchan Aruch add Hefker? There's a reason why perhaps the Shulchan Aruch didn't add Hefker, and the Paiskim are back and forth, so what really is the best Nusach? Now, the reason why the Mishmur probably said the Paiskim say, why the Mishmur and other Paiskim suggest to say Hefker, because obviously a case like that case of Night Yehuda is few and far in between. In a typical situation, a person is basically aware of his possessions, more or less, even if you don't know the exact dollar value of every bottle of schnapps you have, but you have a basic idea of what you put away, or of other chametz that you're making Hefker, so we wouldn't usually apply the principle of Hefker Betois in this situation. In the extreme case, this lumness might come up. So I'm just giving you this idea of what might play in. In a typical situation, though, that we wouldn't necessarily have a distinction between Hefker and Bittel. But that just might be a potential reason why potentially Shulchan Aruch didn't want to choose Hefker, because it's more, it's a safer Nusach, But the Mishnah Berurah says, but in a typical case, Hefker is a safer nusach because that's for sure makes it onerous, and we don't say that you don't have full intention to do it. Like we said before, if you're just going to mevatel something, it's easier to a certain extent to say, well, I didn't really want to mevatel it. So both things have reasons why they don't always fully work. So that's why the Poskim again are suggesting halacha lemaisa. You look in the Siddur, we'll say both texts, but there's a lumdus here of why some Poskim would choose one over the other. Okay, after all this roller coaster of information, let's try to hone in back on our original question. What was the original discussion we brought up? The original shaila was, we had the case of a guy who did a bitl chametz, and he burnt his chametz, and he had a gevaldige Pesach, and he thought he had his matzah, and his mar, he did everything he was supposed to do properly. He gets a letter in the mail over Pesach, and he opens it up after Pesach, realizes that now he has this windfall of inheritance of chametz. What does he do? So Rabbi Yashiv said as follows. This is brought down by his son-in-law, Rabbi Zilberstein, Shlita. And he says,
he received the letter after Pesach or during Pesach?
Let's say he received the letter during Pesach, but he didn't open it until after. He didn't know about the chametz. Technically, the chametz was in his reshus from before Pesach, but he didn't know about it until after Pesach. Exactly when he got the letter is not so important to see. The point is that he technically owned it before Pesach, but he didn't know. He didn't know he owned it. He had no idea.
When he said kol chamira,
he had no idea. He had no idea he had $1 million worth of baked goods.
Mafkir everything.
But was he mafkir? Was he mevatel? What did he do?
Huh?
Which nusach did he say? Says Rabbi Yashiv. So Rabbi Yashiv says, it's in the second line of this paragraph here, in the middle of page 4. He says, Shamati, I heard from my father-in-law, Rabbi Yashiv, Shlita b'na Zatzal, unfortunately. Shim loy bitul es chemtzo, if a person was not mevatel his chametz, rak hefkiro, he only made his chametz hefker, yesh lomar, we could potentially say, shehefker b'toyesu. His hefker was toyesu. If he would have known that he's going to lose $1 million now, he would never have been a mafkir his chametz, let anybody make it ownless, and any John off the street could just come now and take the chametz. For lo chal, it shouldn't work. For avra al ba'ira, potentially he'll transgress the avera of ba'ira. Sharei b'dayta hoya, because he thought, what was he thinking? She'ein lo chametz. He thought he doesn't have any chametz. Ela b'shivu shal prutos, only with a couple of cents worth of chametz. He had a couple of Cheerios, whatever he had, a little bit. He can make that belt a hefker. And at the end, this bar, he had a great, massive inheritance. If he would come to a court of law, the Bezdin might tell him, they would have told him that in such a case, $1 million, that's hefker b'tayis. You can't say, $10 difference. It's a big loss. That's a hefker b'tayis. Kivan shehefker iska shamam, and since hefker is an idea of a monetary law, ve'en lo tokef, and doesn't have halachic validity, kish'en yodea be'ezis chumadur. If you don't know how much you're being mafker, how much you're giving up on, it doesn't work. You have to have some, like we said, ballpark figure of how much you're being mafker in order for hefker to work. I can't just say, I think I have this, like we said before, the case of the ring. If I think it's a plastic ring and I say it's hefker, even if I say it in front of 100 people, it doesn't work if I'm totally out of whack, if it's really worth $10,000. Masha Enkin, hold on, if he said bitl chametz l'Rashi, if you go in Rashi's world, that you mevatel l'chametz, ain't a bitl amomon proti, when you say your chametz is bottled, it's nullified, it's not going on the dollar and cents amount of chametz, elahu chal ala chametz b'ayfin klali, it's going on the cheftz of chametz in a more general sense. V'adrabah, says Rabbi Yashra further, sh'ilu yuvatel l'chametz echad b'lvad sh'ebrushusayini, that's chametz somewhere else, okay, it's a different question. Bottom line, Rabbi Yashiv was saying, let's just clarify, is that it will make a difference in this case how he expressed his kol chamira. If he said hefker, then we have the right to say that perhaps his hefker didn't work, because how can he be mafker $1 million? He had no idea. He thought he was being mafker a shekel's worth of chametz. $1 million is quite a big difference. If he's making all his chametz bottle, then perhaps we can say that it was not chametz anymore over Pesach, and he might not be able to sell it. It's a different part of the question, but we won't say he transgressed the issur of only chametz, because again, there's two aspects here. We want to know if he transgressed the Isser by Ram by Yematzeh, and what he do with the Chametz. So even if he didn't transgress by Ram by Yematzeh, we have to now figure out the second part of the question. What do you now do with this product? He has $1 million worth of merchandise in a warehouse. What do you let it do with it? Well, if he's selling it, doesn't that, maybe that still shows that it's not really dust. You don't sell dust for $1 million. So what is it exactly? So I'm not sure. That part wasn't clear to me exactly. What do you do with it now? But if you learn like Rashi, then at least you save him from transgressing the Isser of Bali Ra and Bali Matze. Bottom line, if someone gets this question, please consult your local Orthodox rabbi on how you're going to paskin. But now at least you're an educated, Sai Sim says, an educated consumer is the best customer, right? So now we have all the information presented and how the mechanics of this halacha, how it will work. Now let's get more lemaisa Of what language should we use when we nullify our chametz? So we said before, the Shulchan Aruch said, you say the Kol Chamira, Shulchan Aruch didn't say Lashon of Hefker, Mishmur put in to say Hefker. But what language do you use? The typical language you look in the Siddur, it's Kol Chamira, it's in Aramaic. It's not a familiar language to many good Jews. Aramaic is not our mother tongue, Hebrew is our mother tongue. So if you look at the Darkei Moshe on the tour, in the bottom of page 4, in paragraph number 5 over there, part 5, the Darkei Moshe writes, Kasef al Kobo, b'kol lashon shiomer habitul moa. In any language that you say the bitul, it works. And then he quotes that from Rabbi Yisrael Mibrin, I'm not sure who that was, that it's better to say it in any language that you know. And he brings a raya from the Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi says the nusach of Kol Chamir, and the Yerushalmi writes it in Hebrew. Kol HaChomet Sheyeshli Bereshusi, etc. Right? But we don't say that. We say in Aramaic. Why? Says the Darkei Moshe, because the Gaonim, who were living in Bavel, they took the Yerushalmi and said, listen, people here speak Aramaic better. The point of Kol Chamira is to understand what you're saying, not just to mutter some words and get on with your day. It's to actually, like we said, process that either mevatel your chametz, you're nullifying it, or you're making it ownless. You have to understand what the words mean. So they put it down into Aramaic because that was the common vernacular in those days. Everyone was living in Bavel. And Vuhu Adin, the Darkei Moshe concludes, you can say it in any language, whatever you understand. So if you speak French, say it in French, English, Yiddish, etc. And that's why you look in the art scroll, they say, this is the text of Kol Chamira in Aramaic, like the Shulchan Aruch says, they put it in Hebrew, and then they say, look at the English, if you don't understand all the words, say it in English, and that's the bottom line, because you spoke, that's the Ramah, pass in the Shulchan Aruch, say it in any language you understand. And that's Allah, I'm not changing it. However, I want to share with you a new thing I found this year, I wasn't familiar with now, until this year, why, even though you must understand what you're saying, there's a mila to saying it in Aramaic. And we should make sure before Pesach we know what Aramaic means in order that we can fulfill it by saying in Aramaic. Why? So the Ber Hativ over there on the commentary, the bottom line on page 4, on the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Say, it says, Kol Chamira, Lefi Shelechem Hi Chiyus Ha'odom. Lechem, bread, is the sustenance of man. Ve'ein Roi Lezalzel B'chvoidai. And it's not appropriate to degrade the honor or the glory due to it. Lekach Nitkan Beloshen Targum. Therefore, the Chachamim instituted it should be said in Aramaic. Shlo Yevinu Hamazikim VaHamakatrigim. So that the prosecutors don't prosecute us and say, why are you throwing in all that good food? Why are you destroying all that good food before Pesach? What kind of person are you? Baltashes, you're wasting. Giving it to a food pantry. Do something positive. Why are you destroying all it? In order they should understand what we're saying, say in Aramaic, because it's a principle that Malachim don't speak Aramaic. Now, hold on. Let's digest this for a minute. We started off a while back saying that the basic mitzvah of Erev Pesach is Tashpisu, destroy the chametz. There's a mitzvah to throw into the fire. The Minchas Chinuch had a whole chakira, do I have to actually throw it into the fire, or can I just be passive, make sure I don't own any chametz? Okay, all the lumdis. But there's a mitzvah to destroy chametz before Pesach. How could the Ber Hativ, according to Sefer Seder Yom, suggest the reason why we have to do it in Aramaic is because we don't want any prosecuting angels to prosecute us in heaven? Why should they prosecute us? It's a mitzvah to destroy the chametz before Pesach. Right? Again, he's saying it's said specifically in Aramaic, so the angels don't chap what's going on, so you get a quick one, you'll pull a wool over their eyes, and they won't know, they won't prosecute against you, and you'll live happily ever after. What's the big deal if they know what I'm doing? I'm doing a mitzvah. So on the top of the next page is Machzor HaShekel. The Machzor HaShekel, which is in the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch, explains as follows. A little small print. Here we go. He first quotes the Sefer Seder Ayah in the Ber Hativ we just quoted, and he says, on the second line there, it says, Shanira habitel zulzul lepas. It seems like bitel is somewhat of a level of a degradation to the bread, shehu chayi adam, because bread, like we said, gives sustenance to man. V'af alpi, and even though, shemuchruch lekiyam mitzvah Hashem, leval yavra b'bal yiroh, we must do this in order to prevent ourselves from transgressing the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach, so we must destroy it. Tzorach lefarish. What you should have done was you should have looked out for oichlim, for eaters. You should have found somebody to eat all your Cheerios before Pesach. What you should have done is had some foresight and prepared yourself properly not to overstock and buy 10 bottles of schnapps before Pesach on sale and then have to be mevatel it. What you should have done is gave it to a person who needs to eat, gave out the food so that you can Tashbisu, you can destroy it, you can not have chametz, but you don't have to do anything, actions to make it like offer, like hefker, and therefore you can save yourself that technical potential kitrug in Shemayim. Now, I was thinking about this, it's still a an amazing idea. And obviously the Mishmur doesn't quote this, the Paiskim don't quote this, as it's something we have to be concerned about, la halacha necessarily, but it's something to think about. But according to this Machzah Shekel, the way I'm understanding it, the lumnus of Tashbisu is passive, not active. Right? Again, that Minchas Chinuch's question of the Tashbisu, do I need to do something active on Erev Pesach to destroy the chametz, or I just have to make sure I don't own any chametz? So we said before, the Mishabruah seems to suggest that I should save at least of kezayis of chametz on Pesach, on Erev Pesach morning, to throw into the fire to make sure I get the mitzvah. Right? And therefore, that seemed to imply that Tashbisu is an action I must do, an active mitzvah. If you go with this opinion of this Berhater, the Machzah Shekel, that I should not have need to come on to Hefker. I should not have needed to come on to a bittul of chametz. I should have really eaten myself the chametz, or found people need food and got rid of the chametz in a much cleaner way before Pesach. To me, that would seem to imply that they're all understanding the lumdus or the mechanics or the ofei of Tashbisu in a way of that it's a passive and not an active mitzvah. Something to think about. So I wanted to end with one hashkafic thought on, we're talking about chametz the whole time, and of course the halacha is that we must destroy and not have any chametz over Pesach, but what's the musr, what's the limud we can take away for ourselves? So the Gemara in Brachas writes, the Gemara says, Rav Alexandri basar de matzli, after he davened, Amar Hachi would say the following final prayer. Ribayin ha'ilam, master of the universe, golav yadu lefanecha, it's known before you, sheretzaneinu lasos ritzanecha, our desire is to do your will. Umi ma'akev, what holds us back? Sa'ar shebe'isa, the yeast of the dough holds us back. V'shibud malchias, and the fact that we're subjugated to the various governmental officials over us. So we say, yiratzim lefanecha, shetatzileinu miyadam, please save us from the Sa'ar shebe'isa, from this yeast of the dough, and of these government reigning of powers. V'nashiv asas chukei ritzanecha, b'levasham, so we can return to fulfill all your mitzvahs properly. What does this mean? The Sa'ar Shabisa, the yeast of the dough, is holding us back. So Rashi here in the Gemara Brachas tells us the Sa'ar Shabisa refers to the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, shel bavavenu ha-machmitzenu. And now every person in their own heart has the Yetzer Hara, which acts as the yeast, which makes us chametz inside of ourselves. And with this remez, that from the Gemara to the Yetzer Hara, to chametz, and the Mefarshim go to town on bringing all types of different Ramazim to the Yetzer Hara and Chametz. I quote here from the Rabbeinu Bachya Rishon, who just brings three basic comparisons to the Yetzer Hara and Bittul Chametz and Bir Chametz and Ar Avoida. And then he has two Api Kabbal. So first he says, since we find the remez of Chametz Yetzer Hara, he says in the first full line of there, he says, "Kashem she'anu mitzuvim levatel haChametz b'leiv min haTorah." Just like we have an obligation to nullify our Chametz min haTorah, kach anu mechayavim levatel Yetzer Hara. We also have an obligation to nullify and get rid, destroy, eradicate our Yetzer Hara from our leiv, so it should not have any power over us. Tashbisu, which means bittul shebaleiv, and said just like our bittul shebaleiv means that the Yetzer Hara also resides in the leiv of a person, so we have to get rid of that as well before Pesach. Secondly, he says, just like we have the halacha that we have to do bittul bir chametz in all the nooks and crannies of the house to get down to every little place where chametz might be to clean it out, so too, he says, we're chayav to do an eternal inspection and to do a self-evaluation to make sure that we are properly on the derech of Hashem. The third thing he says is just like Badikas Chametz, you cannot use the sunlight and you can't use the moonlight and you can't use a torch. It has to be a ner, which is a candle, which can get into all the little nooks and crannies to properly see what, you know, where the chametz might be. So too, when we're doing our self-introspection and we're doing our own self-work, we have to make sure shine up with our neshama to make sure the proper lighting to make sure we're not just, you know, overlooking things and looking too easily, and to do a proper search. And then he says two more thoughts to compare chametz to our own avodah, a little bit more kabbalistic, which I'll just read, but I don't really have a pshat to them. He says, it's about five lines from the bottom of the paragraph, says that which we say that chametz is aser min haTorah for 7 days, or in chutzar it's 8 days, but in Eretz Yisrael 7 days, that it comes to give us the hint that in the seventh millennia, meaning after 6,000 years, when we start the seventh into the 7,000th years, the Yetzer Hara will be bottled, just like after the 7 days of Pesach, the Yetzer Hara is bottled. So too, Asa Lavoi, the Yetzer Hara won't be around anymore. And he says, just like Chametz is mutter after Shiva, Kach Asa Sheischadish Omach Hashvi, there'll be a rebirth and a renewal of the world after the 6,000 years. We'll have to go into the 7,000th. And the Yetzer Hara will come back. I'm just reading the words. I don't know exactly what this means. And it will be, until it gets completely uprooted. And that's why the Chamishi, the Omer, the 50th day of the Omer, which is the Chamishim of Yovel, Shekas v'sham Chameitz Tefen, then we're supposed to eat the Chameitz, because the Yetzer Hara, which again represented by the Chameitz, will be completely eradicated, so somehow that will allow us to eat the Chameitz on Shavuos, which represents somehow Las Lavai. We shall be Zeicha this year to bring the Karban Pesach, and we should be Zeicha to fulfill the mitzvah of Tashpisu and eradicating the Chameitz properly. That Rizal writes, if someone keeps these mitzvahs of eradicating and nullifying the Chametz properly, and the old days of Pesach is careful not to have or see or eat any Chametz, then he will be zocha not to do any averis for the rest of the year. Maybe we'll be zocha this year, and we are saved.
Turn this off.